Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. For 23,000 families who have autistic children on waiting lists for help, the recent announcement by Ontario Community Social Services Minister Lisa McLeod was good news. As the minister said, this plan is in the best interest of all Ontarians. It's fair, it's equitable, and more importantly, it's sustainable now and into the future. So starting April 1st, families will be eligible for up to $20,000 a year for children under 6, up to a lifetime maximum of $140,000 to receive various services to help their kids. Children older than that can access up to $5,000 a year up to age 18 to a lifetime maximum of $55,000. Critics, however, have said families whose children have severe needs can spend up to $80,000 a year alone on behavior therapy. Some of those critics are here in Northumberland. And on February 15th, about 30 parents and children stood in front of our MPP David Pacini's office in Port Hope voicing their concerns. One of those people at the protest is now in studio with me. Kristen Ellison is a single mother of an 8-year-old son who is autistic. Today we're going to talk about her and these changes to the funding, their impact on the system, and hopefully we will gain some insight into the reality of raising a child with autism here in Northumberland. Welcome, Kristen.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's so good to have you here. Can we start with where were you and what were you doing at the moment when you heard the news about these changes?
So I was actually in my home. I watched it. I live streamed it because there had been a lot of talk about pending changes, but mm-hmm. not a lot of information on what those changes would look like. It was largely rumor. And what we were hearing for people in the community who have perspective on policy, we were hearing that it wasn't going to work, is what we were hearing. The policy sounds fabulous, getting children off the wait list and, you know, giving parents funding to go purchase the services that they need. But upon further inspection, there's a lot of concerning elements of this program. So I watched her. I had a very quick cry, and then I got called by CBC Radio to comment on the changes because I had done previous advocacy when the Liberals instituted an age 6 cutoff in 2016. So you know, not much time to really process, reacted at that point. And, you know, that was February 6th, and here we are.
Can we just for a moment talk about the emotional reaction to cry? What emotions were going through you to bring you to that point? Why was it so devastating and emotionally hard for you in that second?
Okay, so for perspective, in 2016, the Liberals wanted to clear the wait list, but instead of, you know, giving a lifetime budget like the current PC government is, they wanted to clear the wait list of children 5 and older. Now, the vast majority of children on that list are over the age of 5, so logically that would be a very quick way to diminish the list. But what people have to understand is when you have a child diagnosed with autism, especially if they're seriously affected, the person diagnosing you, so a diagnosing pediatrician or a psychologist, tells you, okay, you need to walk out this door and go on your way, and you need to call and get your child on the wait list for this therapy. The wait is very long, but it is scientific, it is proven, it works, it will change your life. So go get on this so that your child has a chance. And so the vast majority of those families were waiting for years. And so they did get on that list at a very early age, and waited. So my son went on that list at 2. He was at the top of it when they made that announcement, and we hadn't started therapy, and he was almost 6 years old. So quite a lengthy wait. And so kids waited on that list and were gonna get written off because they had a birthday. And so obviously, discriminating disabled children on their age is not acceptable, at least not to me. And so we fought that. And so, you know, it took 92 days. The Liberals did backtrack. They brought families to the table, and we worked on this new Ontario Autism Program. And it was heading in the right direction. It had some flaws. It had some things that, you know, we wanted to change, but it was going to take time because governments aren't fast, and you know, there's a lot of bureaucracy, but it was the right direction. And so when you hear rumors after a new government comes in, and you know, they're very they want to save money, and it appears they're willing to save money at the expense of everything.
So before we get into the changes and how you interpret them, let's just talk a bit about your son, Carter. You mentioned that he was diagnosed at 2 years old. What did you see in him that got you concerned that you started to pursue that?
So I noticed things looking back from like very young babyhood. Like, we would go to a mom and baby playgroup, and if we were in the room with the other children, it was just so overstimulating that he would scream. And the only way to get him to stop crying was to go into the hall, where it was much quieter. So little things. He has an aversion to food. He has maybe a handful of safe foods that he's willing to eat. Just little things along the way just were different. They weren't like what other parents were going through. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you start to wonder, and you get on Google, and Google can be scary, but, you know, I typed in these things, and they said, you know, autism. And I didn't know anybody who had autism. No family, no history, no nothing. But you know, it fit. And so I went, and I tried to make an appointment to get a diagnosis or to get assessed, either way. And the wait list for that is quite lengthy, too. It was about a year. But you could just tell. He didn't want to play with his cars. He wanted to line them up. You know, he didn't want to play pretend with dinosaurs. He wanted to organize them by their tails, because he realized all his dinosaurs were different sizes, and so how am I going to organize these guys in a row when they're all different types? Well, he noticed some of them have straight tails, some of them have spiky tails. Well, we'll organize the straight tails and the spiky tails. And so he just viewed the world in a very different way. And, you know, it was blatantly obvious around 18 months when he didn't start talking. He just didn't. And so, you know, he's 8 years old now, like you said, and we're still trying to find his voice.
When you were in with the doctors and you heard the diagnosis, what was your immediate reaction?
So you wait for a long time for a diagnosis, and you know, you read, and so I saw it coming. Like, I knew it was most likely the case. And I thought I went in thinking, I'm going to be more disappointed if he doesn't get a diagnosis, because I'm pretty sure this is it. And then if I don't get it, I'm back to the drawing board. I don't want something unnecessarily, but I'm pretty sure I'm on the right track. And it's hard to prepare yourself for something like that, because, you know, the doctor, who is a very highly respected doctor, looked at me and said, "Kristen, I don't know if he's going to talk. I don't know if he's going to grow up and be able to hold a job. He very well may be dependent on you for the rest of his life. Like, this is where we're at." He has autism. He is on the severe end of the spectrum. He is going to struggle with having meaningful relationships and integrating into communities because our communities aren't made for people with autism. And so, you know, I processed it. I didn't really say, what are you going to say to that? Other than how do you write off a 2-year-old? But so, you know, you gather your papers and you go on your way. But it was hard. It hurt. Like, I did everything right. I ate the right food. I took the vitamins. I had great prenatal care. I don't drink. I don't do drugs. Like, we should have been fine, and we're not fine. And so, you know, there's guilt associated with that. But, you know, perspective is great. And so now, 6 years down the road, I mean, he's the same kid. He is spunky and he doesn't talk, but he's the funniest character. And, you know, he teaches us all every day. And the people who know and love him know that he makes this world better. He's worthy.
Now, at what point were you able to get services, and where did you go to get those?
So our regional program coordinator currently is Ken Ark, and so the doctor, in that conversation at the very end, she said, you know, as I said, you know, go, call this number, get on this list, you know, there's assessments and things of that sort, but this is the recognized therapy for kids with autism. This is what you need. It is extremely expensive, but it works.
And there's different kinds of therapy, in my understanding. I understand there's something called ABA, or Applied Behavior Analysis. Can you talk a bit about, is that what Carter gets? So
yeah.
What's that about, and how does that work?
So it is that is the science of behavior science. And so how I describe autism for most people is, in our brain, we have neural pathways. Our brain sends signals to our hands to open a bottle of water, open the door, do whatever, emotion. And it's generally speaking a straight shot. So, you know, things move quickly. You decide you want to, you know, scratch your nose, and you do it pretty much instantaneously. For a person with autism, it's not quite like that. I refer to it as a forest. Imagine a really, really dense forest. And, you know, you can't walk in a straight line. The neurotransmitter can't go in a straight line in a really dense forest. You kind of have to bushwhack. It takes time. It's work. It's repetitive. You're going to have to do the same thing maybe thousands of times to get to the other side. And so that's like a fundamental of autism. You know, things take longer, they learn in a different way, you have to be repetitive, it has to be intensive for the children who need it, they need to be assessed, but you know, it's breaking down those barriers and teaching them in a way that's meaningful to them. So ABA therapy assesses a child on their need, and I mean, it's a vast array of need, and it focuses on everything. So we're not talking preparing children to go to college or have a job. We're talking basic, like life skills, like getting dressed, you know, brushing your teeth, washing your hands, having a meaningful communication system, motor skills, safety skills, self-help skills, you know, and of course things like, you know, colors and numbers and household objects. And for Carter, he has no concept of danger. So that's a big focus for us, because every time we go to Walmart, there is a, even though I hold him firmly, his hand, as soon as he gets out of the car, he's strong, he's really fast. And so there's a risk every time we go anywhere that he could bolt and get hit by a car, honestly. And so it's all of these things, and it's repetitive, and it's intensive. For Carter, he was assessed to need 25 hours a week. So this is like a part-time job for him. So he goes to school in the mornings, and then he does therapy in the afternoon, and it accumulates to 25 hours of very intense work. It is a job. This is how they learn, and once you start teaching them in this way that's meaningful to them, you see major gains, generally speaking.
And there must be, for him, I mean, that's a lot of work for him. He must get frustrated, or how does he react to all of this, or you know, is there that side of it as well for him? I mean, that's a lot.
It is a lot, and I worried about that before going into it. Like, how can you, he started at six, how can you give a six-year-old a job? Like, it is hard work. What we found is it's actually kind of the exact opposite for him. His best times of his day, the times that he's happiest, is when he's doing therapy. He has, between school and therapy, he has stuff 6 days a week. Sundays are our day off, and Sundays are our crappiest day because he needs to be really busy. He needs to be challenged. He needs to be thinking, working. And, you know, for as much effort as I put into it, I'm not a trained therapist. I, you know, didn't study behavior science. It is not my thing. I'm his mom, and so I, you know, you try and keep him busy, but he lives for the challenge.
So can you describe for us what it's like for you as a parent? You started to tell us a little bit about it, but can you give us a typical day? Can you describe a typical day when he gets up, and then how does the day unfold for him and you?
So for us, let's say we'll pick Tuesday. So he gets up, he goes to St. Joseph's in Coburg. So, I drop him off. I personally drop him off at 8:10. He goes to school.
So before you even go to school, I mean, what's the routine in the morning? Does he dress himself? Do you dress him? What about a meal? How does that all work?
Okay. So we're getting there on the dressing. Before he started therapy, we had no, dressing skills or anything of that sort. Now, if I, you know, start his pants, he can pull them up. Or if I put his head in the hole of the shirt, he can put his arms in. So he's participating. And then breakfast, when we started therapy, he couldn't hold a spoon. Now he sits and with some assistance, getting the yogurt on the spoon, he'll eat yogurt for breakfast. So it's truly life skills, things that give you a quality of life and dignity. And so, you know, we do those things. I pack his bag. He has a communication device, so he has an iPad. So he grabs that, helps me put it in the bag. You know, he helps with dressing. I zip his coat up because he doesn't have the motor skills to do that yet. And then, you know, we head out the door just like everybody else. And so he goes to school, and he has an EA who is fantastic, and he's integrated into a normal grade 3 classroom with support. And so, you know, he's quote unquote normal. He goes to normal school and does normal things throughout his day.
And then you pick him up at the lunch hour and take him to
his... Yeah, so I pick him up at 12:15, and I received direct funding to purchase therapy in the community, so I chose to go a home-based route because that's where we were having our most challenges with, like, behavior and frustration. And, you know, when we started, he really didn't like hearing no. I don't know very many people who like to get told no, but it's a part of life. You don't always get what you want. And so that was a big thing. We had to work on that. And so I bring him home, and he and his therapist have a space in the house. And so he does therapy from 12:30 to 4:30. and they work on, like I said, a very wide array of things. I think at any given time, he's working on 40 different tasks in those 4 hours. Wow. And so they accomplish what they can accomplish, and whatever doesn't get accomplished, they start with that the next day and work their way through. But it's amazing. Like, it's so hard because you read about it and people tell you this is what you need and this is what you want. But the vast majority of people, until they receive funding for this program, can't afford it. It's like almost $6,000 a month.
So we'll come back and talk about that after the break. And it's time. I can't believe we've had this pass this quickly. It's time for a commercial break. So I'm talking to Kristen Ellison, who is fighting on behalf of her 8-year-old autistic son against the Ontario government's proposal to change the system. Please stay tuned to Consider This on Northumberland 89.7, our truly local source for news. We'll be right back. And we're back. We were just in the middle of a conversation, and I'm totally off my script and just was so engaged in listening to what Kristen was saying. I'm here with Kristen Ellison, single mother of an 8-year-old son who is autistic. And today we're talking about the changes to the system that are taking place. Kristen, finances is at the heart of this. And yes. So what I'd like to do is, can you tell us how much it costs you for the services that your son receives?
It costs, get ready for it, $5,958.33 a month, which if you math that out is $71,499.96 a year.
$71,000 a year.
Yeah.
Just to get the 25 hours that he has, half a day, every 5 days
right.
a week.
So what most people wouldn't know about that isn't going to just one person, it's going to a team. So I pay three people with that money. I pay a licensed psychologist who oversees it. I pay a senior therapist who writes our programming based on Carter's individual needs, and a therapist who physically does the programming with him. So it's a lot of work, it's very intensive, and it requires significantly more than a single person.
Now, where does all that money come from then? Is it all from the government or?
So right now, because of my situation being a single parent, I couldn't afford Carter the opportunity to receive therapy while he was on the wait list and pay out of pocket because I literally don't have it and don't have a way to get it. So this current funding we waited for, and it is government funding. A lot of families scrape together what they can. They do a few hours a week, or you know, they remortgage their house to buy, you know, a significant amount of evidence-based therapy if they can do that. But if you cannot afford it, then you have to wait your turn.
Have you ever gone into debt to pay for services?
I pay for not necessarily therapy because it's quite expensive, but there are a lot of additional costs associated with having a child with autism and, you know, what he eats, because his diet is restrictive, you know, he was on formula till he was six. He still is in diapers, so that's an additional cost. So providing those daily necessities are prohibitive to going out and buying additional therapy.
And that's not government funded. That comes out of your pocket, all those things.
The vast majority of it. There are some funds. People wait on wait lists for those too, though.
Mm-hmm.
These costs are far and above anything that we get from the government.
So all totaled, the 71,000 plus these additional expenses, how much do you think you're spending in a year for to
Oh, probably $90,000 ish. I mean, I provide him what I can. He certainly doesn't have everything. It's not luxurious by any standards, but I mean, he doesn't go without. Okay. He's well fed, he's clothed, he's, you know.
So let's step back in a moment and let's look at what's being proposed starting April 1st. What is the government offering to do? We talked a bit about it in the introduction, but they're looking at, what is it, $20,000 a year for children under six up to a lifetime maximum of $140,000.
Right.
So put that into perspective for us.
So when they made this announcement, you know, it's a totally different system. Right now, up until this point, children were assessed on their clinical need and prescribed an amount of therapy, and it was funded up to $55 an hour to pay your entire team. This change is significant. It is putting a price tag of a lifetime childhood budget on a child's head based on their age. So children under six are being offered $20,000 a year, and children over six are offered $5,000 a year. And, you know, I'm sure people can do basic math. If it costs almost $6,000 a month, then the children who are younger are going to get a few months of therapy in an evidence-based way, and kids over six, I mean, my son stands to get 3 weeks a year.
Now, you keep talking about the evidence-based, which is the ABA that we talked about
right
earlier. Are there not other things that can be done that maybe don't cost as much that will still give him an opportunity to get help?
So when the government was making these changes and they said, you know, we're going to allocate funding to parents to go out to the marketplace to buy resources, up until this point, the only thing that was covered was ABA. And ABA is great. It is effective and what most kids need. But lots of kiddos benefit from speech therapy, from occupational therapy, from physical therapy, things of those sorts. Those were never covered. So a lot of people were hoping that they could use part of that budget on those things. Unfortunately, we're not able. So this new funding, they've allocated it to behavior services, respite, technological aids, and travel, and so that travel would be for people who don't have services near them to travel to mm-hmm. get therapy. You know, it all sounds well and good, but an iPad isn't therapy. Respite, you know, while lovely, isn't therapy. You know, people went on this list waiting for therapy, and now we're being offered things that won't help our children produce positive outcomes.
You've talked a lot about how this is going to impact you. Can you talk a bit about how our community is going to be affected, because you were with about 30 parents out in front of David Pacini's office.
Right.
What are some of these other stories? What are other people facing? Because I know you talk to other parents.
So, you know, this was announced as a good news announcement to move that wait list. And there are kiddos from Northumberland who are sitting on that wait list. And so, of course, we need to get them into service. But the fine print on this policy shows those dollar amounts won't buy therapy that'll produce outcomes. And so we're not asking for more money, but they're unwilling to invest more money. So the current budget stands at $321 million to go to this program, and nobody is going to get what they need. And so, you know, I had an opportunity to meet a lot of parents who are on that wait list. This government is trying to pin us against each other because they've been using the narrative, you know, three out of four kids are on the wait list, only one of those kids is in service. And You know, they're banking on people on dividing us. But in talking to a lot of people, people are educated on what this therapy is if you're in our situation, and they know that the wait is long, but it's worthwhile to have the therapy that their children assessed and get whatever a clinician deems necessary, because that's how you produce positive outcomes. So, you know, it's been heartbreaking. You know, it's not about my kid. My kid needs more time. He's made significant gains, but the divide between peers is really wide, especially with our severe kids as they get older. The disparity is just huge. So, you know, these kids are never going to get evidence-based therapy who are on the wait list. And so those families are, you know, gravely disappointed in this policy. And then there's children and families like myself who are in service who the money runs out on April 1st. And, you know, there's no meaningful transition plan. These kids are going to school. And so, you know, as a parent, what can you do? You call the school board, you talk to your superintendent, you talk to your principal, you talk to, you know, anybody who will listen to you, because we need to have a plan to get these kids into school in a safe way, because now the therapy is gone, you know, in a month. And so in having those conversations, like, it is very scary. There is no new dollars for school. The government put a hiring freeze on staff as of yesterday. And so those 8,400 kids that they say are in the program and are going to, you know, eventually run out of the current funding of the system and be allocated their lifetime budget, it won't pay for the therapy that we need. It'll buy for me, for example, 3 weeks. Okay, so that gets me 3 weeks into April, and then what? You know, the repercussions of this policy are massive, because it's not just our kiddos with autism who are going to go to school and the school's not going to be prepared. You know, these kids are going to go into real classrooms with real students who may be neurotypical, but who are going to suffer because of this. Who are you going to ignore? Are you going to ignore the kid who can self-regulate, who can sit quietly, who might need literacy support or math support or whatever, but is, you know, functioning in a way that, you know, they can sit? Or are you going to, you know, ignore the kid who's throwing chairs or hitting themselves or trying to run away or any of the behaviors that it might be, because they didn't get the therapy they needed to work through these issues?
So I understand you met with David Pacini.
I did.
And can you tell us about that meeting?
David was receptive. I would say he was gracious. Our meeting was cut short because of an announcement he had to get to, which was fine. After our protest outside of his office, he wasn't there that day, but his staff called the families who are in this riding immediately and set up a time to meet as a group last Saturday, and he gave us several hours of his time. And he listened. You know, they talk a lot about how we're in a deficit situation and tough choices are going to have to be made, which I can totally appreciate and accept. But they're spending $321 million of your dollars. You pay taxes. The people listening to this program pay taxes in Northumberland. And so it is your money. And so they're not spending any less money. They're not taking away. They're actually saying they're enhancing the funding. And so at this point, it is $321 million a year of taxpayer dollars that are going to get divided between something like 40,000 kids. And so
So it's almost like you have a pie, and everybody, right now, I give you a slice that you need. You need a certain slice, here's your slice. Now they're going to take the pie, and they're going to cut it up all equally and give it to more people, but nobody's going to get a really big piece of pie anymore.
Right. That's exactly it. So the way I chose to describe it is like trying to solve world hunger by giving everybody one sandwich for an entire year and expecting people not to starve. That doesn't mean our children are dying. It's not comparable, but it's a really rudimentary way to explain that if you separate the dollars into such tiny slivers that they're not effective, then what are you really getting? You're getting, you know, a good news announcement of you cleared the wait list.
Did you get a sense from him when you walked away from that meeting last Saturday that you moved the dial with him?
He committed to taking, he took lots of notes. I give him full marks for that. He listened. He said he would take our concerns to the minister and to caucus. I mean, that's a good start. But what he and they have to understand is this is our lives. This is our children's lives. We aren't going to go away. He can't just pat us on the hand and say, oh, I'll bring your concerns to, you know, Queen's Park, and it be done. Like, we're willing to help him. And, you know, we want to be a part of the solution. We aren't asking for more money. We don't feel that having a needs-based program is unreasonable, and there are ways to make the same amount of dollars work harder and work better. So, you know, he was receptive, certainly, but we have to keep him accountable, I would say.
So can you explain to us in the long term what this means? Because, you know, we're talking about if this doesn't follow through, we're talking about short-term costs. What about long-term costs? What long-term impact is this going to have?
Just before I do that, I have to say, there's also income testing on this plan. So they're going to start clawing back at a family income of $55,000 a year up until $250,000, where you receive no funding at all. So it's very likely that the vast majority of families on this wait list and families in this program who have, you know, a parent with a good job or two parents with, you know, very decent jobs won't qualify for the full amount of funding, which just further waters down what we're getting. But to talk to long-term costs, they're going to be astronomical. Because if kids like Carter don't make the gains they need to make now, he's going to be my responsibility for the rest of my life. Which, I love him. He is my son. I will always take care of him. But at some point, you know, parents aren't going to be around anymore. And these kids may not be able to move out or hold jobs. And so we're going to be looking at, you know, residential housing or, you know, lifetime ODSP payments. 50 years of ODSP is going to be really expensive.
So it's pay now or pay later?
Yeah, and the later is going to be crippling, because 40,000 kids not getting what they need is... you know, if I venture to guess that it'll be in the tens of billions of dollars.
So going forward, what's next?
We're going to keep the dialogue going, you know. We're still protesting. There's a protest in Bowmanville today. And, you know, the media has been exceptional, you know, telling our stories, getting it out there. We've continuously asked for a seat at the table with Minister McLeod. She doesn't appear to be listening, but, you know, families who have children with autism are extremely dedicated. Just because we didn't get the outcome we wanted a few weeks into this process doesn't mean we're going away. I will be calling and meeting with David Piccini, and he knows that, and he fully appreciates, you know, that I have to do this for my son because it is the right thing to do.
This all sounds very noble, but in bottom line is that you've got to get these guys to move the dial.
Yeah.
What was the thing in the last round? When you talked earlier, you talked about you were able to get the Liberal government to back down and they made some changes. What was the pivotal point there? And can you repeat it here? I mean, what was it that changed their mind in the end?
Well, the Liberals had marketed themselves as caring people. And so leaving a generation of children behind didn't seem very caring. So they were more easily shamed than this government. But I think what they really didn't expect was the community's ability to organize. Protests, Queen's Park. We went to every fundraiser, every event. Everybody knew about us, and the media was relentless. And all of that contributed to an environment that just wasn't conducive, because the vast majority of Ontarians know somebody or have a distant person that they know who's affected by autism. And so they really didn't bank on our ability to get people to care. And they were willing to come to the table. I think it's a little bit different this time. It's a little bit harder. Conservatives are notorious on trying to save money and trying, to whittle costs down. But they're spending the same amount of money, and it's not going to work. And so, I think we're doing a lot of the same things this time. And, we're getting good feedback from the communities all over the province. So I think we might be in for a longer road, but we're not going to stop until they...
Is there a middle ground, though?
Yes.
Because, they want to save costs, so they're not going to want to spend money, and yet you've got these huge waiting lists. Where's the middle ground for you?
The middle ground is a needs-based system that assesses kids on their merits and looking for the inefficiencies in the system. There is a lot of wasted money in that $321 million, and there are ways to recoup those dollars and put them towards moving the wait list.
How do we do that?
So things like, up until this point, there were two streams of service. So there was direct funding and direct service. Direct service is provided by KinArc in our area, and it's 66% more expensive than giving parents money and going to the marketplace. So with this policy change, the government's done away from this direct service and is allocating the money to parents, which is good. So you're going to recoup that massive drain in overhead. And so that money can go to moving the kids on the wait list. On top of that, assessing kids on need, make sure that no kids are getting too much and no kids are getting too little. If you need $20 and I give you $30, but I need $10, does it make sense to give you $30? Or should I give you the $20 that you need and give me the $10 that I need with the same $30? And so you're going to have cost savings that way. We've been advocating for years to have a standardized rate across the province, because right now you can charge basically whatever you want. If it was like having doctors and you can charge XYZ for a doctor's appointment and this for a physical and this for this, everybody would have the same starting ground and we would know what it would cost for each kid depending on how many hours they needed. Another option that we've advocated for is for our clinicians, so our therapists, to have a college, like the College of Physicians or Dentists or other industry colleges like that. And that would give recourse for people who act unethically. It's not overtly common, but I mean, there's always bad apples. And so if you had recourse, if you had teeth to ensure that there were repercussions for people who were abusing the system, it would discourage it, and you would see savings that way too.
What can someone in that's been listening to this interview or someone in the community, what can they do to be supportive of you very quickly?
So we have a petition. We're doing protests across the province. But I think the single most important thing you can do is to have a conversation about what your values are and where you want to see your tax dollars going. So writing a letter to your MPP, making a phone call. That goes a long way to show the values, especially of people who aren't on this road with us, people who don't have skin in the game. And it can be quick and easy. There are form letters, you know, going around. I'd be happy to be reached out to on social media or anything of that sort. And just start the conversation because these kids are going to school. And every child in school is going to be affected because they're not going to receive the resources that we need for them to thrive in school. They're not ready. So,
thank you so much for coming in and explaining all that. It's really complex waters, and I appreciate very much the time you've taken today. Thank you for coming in, Kristen.
Thank you so much for having me.
This was the first in a series of interviews I'm going to be doing over the next few weeks looking at the healthcare services in Northumberland. This autism announcement was the first. We also heard about a major overhaul to our healthcare system announced by Minister Christine Elliott. I have guests coming in from various services who will help us parse out what this will mean to us here in the county. At the end, I'm hoping to get our MPP, David Pacini, to come in and help shed some light on this and what the government is doing. So I hope you will continue to join me each week over the next month as we work our way through these complex issues. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This. Or if you're on Twitter, you can send me a message at rwash. I would always be happy to read out a selection of your comments on next week's show. If you would like to listen to this or share it or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you'll find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this Northumberland.